The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille. Official media partner, the Italian Wine Podcast, is delighted to present a series of interviews and highlights from the 2023 Wine to Wine Business Forum, featuring Italian wine producers and bringing together some of the most influential voices in the sector to discuss the hottest topics facing the industry today. Don't forget to tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. or visit theitalianwinepodcast.com for more information.
Good morning. Welcome to this very interesting session. My name is Nunzio Castaldo, and before I introduce my co-chair, Giuseppe Locascio, I would like to brief a little bit about me. I was invited here, along with Giuseppe, to talk about this very interesting topic, Small is Beautiful, which is something that almost 80% of the wine producers from Italy should really have the right perspective of how to integrate and most of all interface with the American market. But let me just give you just 3 minutes by myself, so you know who you're talking to and who to listen to. I've been working in this great sector called wine business for the past 35 years or more. I worked, my career is very boring because I only worked for, you know, two companies, 32 years with one and 5.5 years with another. So the one that I worked for most of my professional life is called Winebo. And I'm closing my kind of like a most important phase of my professional life with a company that resembled with the Winebo of many, many years ago. When I started with Winebo, the company was literally delivering cases from a garage from New Jersey. When I left Winebo, I resigned from Winebo, the company revenue was above $850 million. Winebo has been one of the greatest, I would say, basket for Italian wines. Not only was a point of reference, but was a final destination for many producers from this beautiful land called Italy. Well, I decided to go back on my roots. So in 2018, I acquired this company founded by a gentleman called Livio Panebianco that unfortunately passed. And I took over the company. And since then, I go back again, reevaluating and seeking and dealing with small producers with very atypical varietals and so on. So to my right is Giuseppe Locascio, which I had the pleasure to know him for more than 20 years, not because he was part of the family that owned, obviously, Winebo at that time, but also because I had the pleasure to work with him. He traveled with me, he tasted with me, we lost planes, we spent many, many, many dinners, and we basically were at one point the gatekeepers of the two portfolio, of Italian portfolio and the Austrian portfolio. Giuseppe decided to branch away from the company before me, and after many other things that he did, has been very influential for, again, you know, to take by the hand small producers and teach them how to enter and stay and consolidate in this very articulated, a very important, but very difficult and challenged market, which is called USA. He's the co-founder and managing director of Lucidity Wine Merchants, which is an importer, a distributor, in California, and he also seeking to have a more regional platform. So I'm very, very pleased, you know, to be with him, and I will ask some questions after he will show a presentation that he prepared. It's very short.
Grazie, Nunzio. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for the introduction, by the way. So I'm going to try to keep this short, hopefully. So this is kind of the topic of today. And even though we both are on the smaller size for import companies in the U.S., many of the things we're going to say today apply to the market in general. So these are the learning objectives that we hope are going to stick with you today. First of all, let's try to understand how complicated and complex this market really is, okay? And this is kind of continuing the conversation that started yesterday with Danny Brager and Mr. Mondavi, which already touched on some of these topics. Point number two, let's understand what kind of options do you have as a winery or a winemaker or a company to enter and manage the U.S. market. Number three, we're going to try to give you a few recommendations on how to pick the right model for your company, hopefully. And number four, in which way you can try to establish a relationship and a stress long-term that is fruitful for both you and your importer, okay? So why is this market so complicated and expensive? Everything starts in 1933, okay? America understands prohibition does not work. At the same time, they know that they cannot make a free market of the beverage alcohol business because the abuse of alcohol obviously has cost on society. So they found a really clever way of controlling the way the alcohol beverages are bought and consumed in the U.S., okay? And this very clever way is something we call the orderly market principle, meaning you cannot let this industry run free, okay? So you have to have some rule making for it. So first thing, they decided to split the legislation on two levels. So we have a federal level of legislation and taxation, so your wines get taxed twice, okay? And then you have a second level of legislation, which is at the state level. Now, the federal level is relatively straightforward. Where the fun really is at the state level, because with the 21st Amendment, federal government has delegated to the state the way of making laws about consumption and sale of alcoholic beverages. So basically, when we say the U.S. market, it's not really accurate. We should really talk about 50 different markets. And when I mean different, I mean sometimes dramatically different, okay? So what works in California might not work in New York. What works in New York might not work in Florida, so on and so forth, okay? So this is the very first thing that I hope winemakers understand. It's really not one market, but it's a collection of different markets, all regulated differently, okay?
Are you enjoying this podcast? There is so much more high-quality wine content available from Mama Jumbo Shrimp. Check out our new wine study maps, our books on Italian wine, including Italian Wine Unplugged, The Jumbo Shrimp Guide to Italian Wine, Sangiovese Lambrusco and Other Stories, and much, much more on our website, mamajumboshrimp.com. Now back to the show.
I'll give you an example, so this is not just theoretical. Okay, for example, in California, when I'm selling wine, I can pretty much make up any price I want. I go to, I don't know, Giovanni, and I sell a Chianti for $5. Then I go to Luigi, and I sell the same Chianti for $10. So I don't really have an obligation to publish those prices, okay? I can do pretty much whatever I want. It does not work the same in, say, New York, where Nunzio has to publish those prices 1 month in advance, okay? I'm telling you these things because all these regulations at the state level really have an implication on your strategy. And these are things you should be addressing with your importer and distributor. The other thing that the legislation, so the Congress decided to put together to make this a very complicated market is called three-tier system, okay? So basically what they did was to artificially structure the supply chain in order to have a very long chain. Long chain means you basically, each step, you have a markup. So your product, or every product really, gets marked up. And so, and the idea behind it is the price of alcohol is higher, consumption should be somewhat managed and should be a little lower, okay? Notwithstanding that this became the largest market for wine in the world, but this is really, this was what the legislation really wanted to do. Make a long supply chain so that your product is going to cost a little more, and so consumption should be less. Three-tier system means a domestic winery has to find a distributor in every state, an imported winery has to first go through an importer and then a distributor, and then eventually the wine is going to go into a restaurant or a shop or a hotel or a wine bar. So these are the two columns, okay, of the system. Very, very important to understand why it's so complicated. The final effect is what we call the four time, in this case, 4.5. This before COVID, this was four time. Now it's 4.5, sometimes five times your ex-seller price. So if you're selling a wine for, say, €5, you can expect that wine to be on the shelf in America everywhere between 20 and 25, okay? This is not accurate. It's not rocket science. It's not a very precise formula, but it's a relatively good approximation of it, okay? Very important, because sometimes you feel your product is kind of, you know, middle-end product. In America, it's actually a bit more expensive. This also means that this is a really expensive market for you to manage and for us to work with. And this is a huge country. It's expensive to live in America. It's expensive to travel in America. It's expensive to have dinner in America. So everything you do in America is just much more expensive than here. So takeaway, this is a really expensive market to manage. And I'll tell you why I'm bringing all these things up when it comes to choosing the model to work. So yesterday, Danny Breger spoke a lot about how to really fine tune and find the right market for your product. Let's try to do the math again. And I promise this is the only slide where you have to do a little bit of mental math, okay? I'm gonna give you two big numbers, okay? One is 450 million, which is the amount of wine that, give or take, was consumed in America in 2021. And these are 9-liter equivalent cases, so 12 bottles per case, okay? So try to keep in mind this 450 million, okay? The other big number is 334 million, which is the total population of the US. Is this your market? Nope. As a smaller or even medium Italian winery, these are just generic numbers. You should really not rely on them. They give you kind of a big picture, but I wouldn't base a strategy on these wines. To do that, you might want to do something that in Marketing 101 is called segmentation, okay? So try to fine-tune the numbers, try to refine the numbers and see really what is meaningful and usable in your strategy when you want to work in the US, okay? I'm gonna give you a bit more of a mathematic cue to you guys now. So the first number I wanna give you is 10%. Italian wine roughly is 10% of the total of the wine consumed in America. How do we get to that 10%? So 450 million cases, two-thirds of those cases are actually made in America. So imported wine is about a third. Italy is one-third of that third, okay? Now, I would argue, since we are talking to smaller producer, that that isn't your number either. If you're selling wine that is above $15 or $20 retail, 40 million cases isn't really the market where you're going to be playing, because a lot of those 40 million cases of Italian wine, there is a lot of Prosecco, there is a lot of Pinot Grigio, Valpolicella, Basic Chianti, huge brands. Long story short, if you are a winery that is, let's say, less than 200,000 bottles, you're probably playing in a category that is about 1.5 million cases big, okay? So thanks for doing the math with me, by the way. So a little bit more math, very important. The other numbers to remember are 15% and 85%. So 15% is the share of core drinkers. So these are people that drink at least twice a week, or at least once a week, I think. I believe everyone in this room does way more than that, so I don't think we count in the core. We're probably super core at this point. But these are the people that have the knowledge, the means, the interest, the intellectual curiosity of buying Italian wine. And these are not just the Chianti drinkers. These are the Frappato drinkers. These are the Lacrima di Moro d'Alba drinkers. These are adventurous people that love Italy, come to Italy, go see wineries. They have that kind of commitment. They have that kind of passion for the Italian wine product, okay? So it's in this kind of arena that you're really playing. However, 15% means roughly 44 million people that are core wine drinkers. However, the Italian core wine drinker arena or area, if you wish, is smaller, way smaller than 44 million, because your winery will have to face three different forces in the market. One is hyper competition, I should say. Your wines will compete with Austrian, Spanish, Australian, Argentinian, Chilean, American, everyone is selling wine in the U.S. So there is a lot of competition. There is a lot of distributor consolidation, which is something that Mr. Mondavi pointed yesterday. To give an idea, the two largest groups of national distributors account for 70% of the market. Okay? That's a lot. It's about, I think, $17 billion in sale, these two large, super large companies. And then we are facing a slowdown in consumption, which is unfortunately due to demographic changes. So if you put all this thing together, basically your core market is going to be about 40 million cases and 18 million consumers. That's roughly the size of Ecuador, okay, to give you to put something in perspective. The wine consumer, it's about 80 million people in total. These are people that casually buy a wine every month or every 2 months. And 80 million people is a little less than the population of Germany, okay? So, again, I'm trying to put everything in perspective because at the end of the day, if you are a small winery and you have limited resources, you might want to make sure which kind of market you are addressing, okay? And how to address that market boils down to something called import model. How will you go to the U.S.? Normally, we talk about two major approaches, okay? One is called a national importer. The national importer is typically a larger company, very well structured, very well organized, typically also very well funded. It's a one-stop shop. So basically, you're giving the keys of the market to this importer, okay? He does everything for you, technically. And he will be the one deciding the distribution for your wine. You don't have any say in that decision, okay? And they obviously cover the entire U.S. The somewhat opposite option, it's something smaller, which we normally call a regional distributor. And these are typically integrated company, okay? So they're typically importers and distributors, which is something you can legally do in the U.S. So typically, as a small importer does distribution in his own state, and normally he will activate distributors kind of in the same region, let's say the West Coast or the Midwest or the Southeast. They typically are regional players. There would be a third option, which we normally refer to as a direct import option. Basically, this is the Italian winery setting up a company in the U.S., staffing that company, and then determining the market for its own products. This is a solution that has been chosen by large Italian wineries, like, say, Santa Margherita, for example, but also medium-sized wineries like Avignonesi, for example. There are a number of them. Even Vaira, at one point, was self-imported, okay? It's not a solution for everyone. It's obviously very focused on the products of the company, but it is obviously a bit more of an expensive solution. Now, how do you choose among these models? Now, typically, as a consultant, I like to bring up someone that is a bit smarter than me, okay? So one is, this is the next slide, sorry. Let's dig a little bit more into these models. I put together what I think is a qualitative table, okay? This is not mathematical or anything like that. It's just a approximate evaluation of the specific characteristic of every model. So, for example, in terms of cost, how much is going to cost you to work with a national importer versus a regional importer versus going direct? Typically, the most expensive solution is the national importer because it will probably ask you to mark down your export price quite a bit because they have to make margin for their own operations, okay? The other two options are a little less expensive for you. Obviously, if you're setting up your own office in the U.S., probably you might want to get financing, but it's not super expensive. Market risk. Well, if you lose your national importer, you are basically starting from scratch again. You will start from zero, okay? While if you lose your distributor in California, hopefully it's not me, you can find another one, okay? So typically, it's a little less risky. You're not putting all your eggs in one basket, as we say, okay? Relationship with the end consumer. Typically, national importers are kind of filtering your presence, so they will tell you when they want to see you in the market. And it's very difficult to establish a relationship with the final customer, say the restaurant in Seattle or the wine shop in Miami. Okay, it's much easier, obviously, if you go direct or if you have a smaller importer, which is usually someone that is a bit more agile and is going to let you come to the market a bit more often. Control over distribution. With a national importer, you have zero. You are basically going with whatever network they are using. And that means that when you select your importer will be a section of the total book of a distributor. So let's say this distributor maybe has five Italian import company. Each of them has, I don't know, 10 Italian wineries. So you're sharing the same distributor with, say, 50 other Italian brands. Okay? So just keep that in mind. You don't really have that with a smaller distributor because you're really only sharing your direct contact with the distributor, so you don't really have another layer in between you and distribution. Depth of assortment, how many different SKUs, how many different wines can you sell? Typically, a national importer wants to be very focused, so if you're making 10 wines, they will probably tell you, give me one that is very important for you, and we'll see what we can do with the next two, and maybe one day in the long term, we'll gonna bring something else inside, okay? So if you're going national, it's really shrinking down the options, how many SKUs they're gonna work with, okay? You don't really have that option, that problem if you're self-imported, and really a little less complicated with a regional distributor. This is not, again, the model, every model is different for every company. The perfect model does not exist. All of these models have pros and cons. They might be excellent for one company and not so good for another one. And I think we can agree on this, it's not so much about your size, or it's not just about your size, because I know small wineries in Italy that are very happy with their national importer. You know, it's easy, it's one relationship, it's fine. And I also know large Italian companies that decided not to work with a national importer and manage directly 5, 6, 7 different importer distributors in the U.S. So it doesn't really matter the size as much as what makes the most sense for you. And how do you determine what makes the most sense? Again, we are business partners. This is why we love to bring in the smarter people. One of the smarter people was Socrates. He used to say, know thyself, know yourself. And in so many years of working in this industry, it's amazing how many wineries do not do that kind of introspective work of understanding exactly what they want from the U.S. market. It's mind-blowing. So in Management 101, they tell you, okay, if you have to come up with goals, make sure your goals are realistic. Oh, I want to sell 10,000 cases in the U.S. That's really not realistic. If you are new, it's going to take a little time. Measurable, put a number. Obtainable, so again, not just realistic, but can your structure deliver that kind of result? And then time-sensitive. Give it a little time, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever that is. But you have to do that work, and you really have to know what you want from this market. The other quote that I want to bring from another philosopher, more or less from the same time, was Sun Tzu, which used to say, if you want to go to war, you should really do the math first. My uncle used to say, live the dream, but do the math. Kind of the same thing. Again, what are your resources? Do you have what it takes? Do you have, number one, do you have the money? Because this is an expensive market. And number two, do you have the time? Can you commit time to come and work in the U.S.? And it really boils down to, are you ready for this market? No one said you have to be in the U.S. market. No one said you have to be in the U.S. market immediately. It's something that you might want to achieve and work on progressively. Perhaps, okay? So this is what we call an approach that is resource-based. So you might want to do this kind of work introspective and at the same time try to understand if you have the resources to do that. At this point of the presentation, I was kind of tired of all these boxes and text, so I decided to do this one with a little bit more, you know, images. Going back to the differences between a national importer and a regional importer, this is how a national importer is going to look like a little bit, okay? So probably the guy on the front is the vice president. You're going to see the president. You're going to see maybe once in your life. Then in the back, you're going to have like the vice presidents, and then somewhere in the middle, you have the portfolio or brand manager, which, let me tell you, if you go this route, is going to be, he or she is going to be your best friend, because the brand manager or the portfolio manager is your liaison with the whole company. He's going to be in charge of determining everything you need from this particular importer. And then the guys, the little guys all the way in the back, those are the reps that will go to the restaurant or the shop selling your wine. I've exaggerated a little bit. This is, again, a little bit of a generalization. There are importers that are much more nimble and leaner than this, obviously. But by and large, if you are with a national importer, you probably will be in a very structured, very well-organized company, okay? What about the regional importers? Well, we kind of like to call ourselves the ninjas a little bit, right? Why? Because we are typically leaner companies. We are talking about companies that are probably less than 50, 40 employees. It's 8 in my company. And this allows us to be a little bit more agile. We can execute things quicker. You don't really have to go through a lot of people to talk to me. I pretty much do everything. But obviously, if your company requires a bit more of a structured approach, probably we are not meant to be working together. So again, try to match your needs with the capabilities of your partner, okay? And this is a simplification, but it's fairly accurate. A couple of tips, a couple of suggestions on what to do, what not to do. And I would love to stress, this is not just about the regional importers. This kind of applies to everyone. I would recommend you do this with whatever kind of model you're working with in the U.S., okay? First of all, we are, as I said before, business partners. Very much like a marriage, okay? You're here for the long term. Changes in the U.S. are very hard. The structure of the market, as you've seen before, does not really lend itself to quick, rapid changes. It takes a while to process changes. So if you're changing a distributor, it's a very difficult process. In some markets, it's actually almost impossible because they own your brand unless something happens, okay? So long-term vision, it's a must. With that said, plan with us, plan with your importer, plan with your partner, tell them what you need. Let's agree on what we can deliver, because we'll have to kind of find a middle ground on this. But let's work on shared goals, okay? Support execution, and this works with everyone, national importer, local importer, it doesn't really matter. But you really have to commit your resources to work with them. Ask them what they need, and let's try to put it together. Communication, early, often, but not too often, I would say, and promptly. Don't come up like the week before you're launching a new product and you let us know, oh, you know what, we have a new Cantia now. Well, we probably should have heard that before. So again, communication needs to be prompt, clear, and hopefully often. Very, very important, listen. Listen to us. If we tell you something doesn't work, it's probably not because we don't want to do it, because it doesn't work. And then, I think we've been taught that you have to explain things, even numerically, and that if it's a partnership, we'll tell you exactly why it doesn't work, and we'll tell you what is going to work. But listen, let's have a conversation, let's try to understand each other. Obviously, conversely, what not to do, I would recommend you do not put yourself in a transactional relationship. Your job is not done when your wine is picked up at the winery, okay? Your job is done when the wine, there is someone in a bar in Seattle drinking that wine. That's when the job is done, all of us, okay? So obviously, as I was saying before, no last minute changes, give us a little time. Do not make assumptions, because a product works in New York, it's not said, it's not natural that the same product might work in Chicago or in San Francisco, okay? Going back to listen to us, we will tell you exactly what works in every market. No lack of support, it's a no-no. If you're not there, if you're not spending time with us, you're kind of falling down in our priority list, okay? And then lack of communication, which is obviously a given with what we said before. Last but not least, takeaways. And I think we're going to open the mic for questions and answers. So number one, I think we now understand why the U.S. market is so difficult and expensive. Number two, it's important to choose a business model, an import model that makes sense for you. Okay? It might not make sense for your neighbor, but it has to make sense for you. Importers and distributors are long-term partners. It's very difficult to change these relationships. And we share your vision and your goals. That's important. And then obviously, how to try to get to be successful in the U.S. market, understand the complexity, calibrate your expectation. This is something that it's really difficult to do, I understand, but you really have to calibrate your expectations and then work with us on those shared goals. And I think that's it in terms of the show.
Thank you very much, Giuseppe. I think that was a really great journey through slides, and I'm sure that people are very eager to go back again and revisit those points. I would like to leave also with another takeaway. Despite all these, alarming projections in front of you, the American consumers love Italy. They love Italy. They love made in Italy. They like to drink, dress, eat, vacation to Italy. And we have something that other wine country they don't have. You know, we have this value of that it's very unmeasurable. You know, quite often when I go in front of customers, I say, Nunzio, it's amazing the wines that, you know, that I tasted with you, because I mean, I will even pay like $10 more, you know. That is an equity. This is a capital that, you know, that other country they don't have. And then we have diversity. Let's always talk about diversity. You know, we can talk about Tazzalenghe from Friuli. You know, we go to Nascetta, and we can talk about, you know, like the Caricante from Etna in the same conversation. No others, you know, wine region can do that. So let's use those weapons, you know, to always, you know, put ourselves in front of a potential customer or consumer that, you know, that is willing to explore with you this journey. Because at the end of the day, what we sell either in California or in New York is experience, you know, and not only experience, but, you know, it's like, you know, like some sort of a feeling, emotions that we have to translate through, you know, or transfer through a wine glass. Don't be scared about this articulation, but be aware and be conscious, you know. I like when, you know, a producer that only makes 20,000 bottles, you know, he's willing to put himself in front of these giants, you know. But you have to be cautious, you know, you have to be realistic as well. So I want to thank you very much for listening to Giuseppe, and I hope that this session was very useful for you. And,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.